creepers, leg warmers, and shoulder pads. It's fashion next on Tom and Hank Talk About the 80s. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank. How are you?
I told you right when I pressed record that you should say, hi, Hank.
I thought you said to give it a second.
Well, give it a beat.
Oh, I got a beat for you right across the chops, buddy.
Hi, everybody.
It's raining outside.
It is raining.
It sounds really nice with the window behind me with the sort of the pitter-pat of the rain.
It does, and it was very, very cold here today.
It was very cold.
It was like 48.
Luckily, I have a heater that heats up the room in about 13 seconds. And you got to open the windows to cool it down in here. So.
Every time I'm always like, gosh, that little heater works real well.
It's a Champion. I have no idea what brand it is. It's probably a Champion brand.
How's the week been for you?
Very weaky.
It has been weaky. It's gone so quick already.
Yeah, I can't believe tomorrow's only Thursday. Great. Thanks for reminding me.
No, it's already Thursday.
Oh, no. It's Wednesday now.
And we went to go see a movie this weekend.
That was fun.
I finally got to see Star Wars The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi. And that was my second viewing. I think I have one more left in me. I just love it.
Really? I've been thinking about it. I don't know if I could see it again on the big screen. It was horrifying to me. It was great. I really liked it. But it was very, very sad. And as I said, when we left the theater.
And loud.
It was very loud.
It was very intense.
And when we left the theater, I was like, okay, my childhood, one of my best friends from childhood, something happened to him right now. And a lady in front of us laughed at that. And I wanted to go, listen, lady. I'm not laughing.
That's the lady who's like, 8-year-old daughter was shriveled up in a ball in her lap because it was so loud and there was so much violence and explosions and people getting blasted and lightsabered. And
like, but I really did like it. I liked it a lot.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
I thought it was good. Okay. I just noticed that I think for this first couple of minutes, I've really been yelling a lot because people are saying that you're nice and clear and I'm not because of my weird voice.
I don't know what that means because my voice to me sounds like a chicken being dragged down a river.
Wow.
I know. And chickens, I don't know if you know this, they don't swim.
I did know it.
They lost their web feet back in the dinosaur times.
The dinosaur times weren't real.
No.
And if they were real, people were next to them riding them.
Like in Jurassic Park. We've all seen it.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Jurassic Park is probably one of the most realistic views of dinosaurs.
Well, you know, I would actually think that many people may agree and disagree.
I don't know if people realize this, that dinosaurs, they tell us they have a brain the size of a walnut.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the neighborhood. It could be an almond or a chestnut, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of a walnut. And yet these creatures are able to unlock doors and, like, walk across a bridge and drive a Jeep.
I don't know if they say that the Velociraptor has the brain of the size of a walnut. I think they say a T-Rex does.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
A Velociraptor has the size of a double human.
A double human brain?
Yeah. A double human is... Oh, my God. A double human... I don't even know what it is.
You just made that up, didn't you? That's not a real thing.
Well.
But, yeah, other than that... other than the dinosaur fiasco, it's been a fine week. It's been fine. It's been great.
Yeah, I've been returning to my day job this week, really kind of the fullest week since my surgery. And
since your hip popped out of your leg the other day.
The other day, and then two weeks ago. And then, but now I'm back at work and I'm feeling good. I took a little fall the other day just because my knee locked up. But
were you pushed?
I was not pushed. You were not behind me, so I was not pushed. One of my closest, dearest friends in the world, my very dear best friend, Amy, always says that she knows that the last words that she's going to hear before she dies is me saying oops. And I've said that to Tom before. Yeah. And I said, I know that this is the truth, that the last words I'm ever going to hear are you saying, oh no.
Or it'll be the words before it will be, hey, check this out. This is going to be funny.
But otherwise, it's going well. It's just flying by, which is nice.
Speaking of flying by,
yeah,
we are recording episode 9 right now.
Is it really already?
I believe so.
Wow.
Yeah, which is the same amount of Star Wars as I believe that there are. No, I don't know. Or Jurassic Parks.
Episode 9. Do you remember episode 1? We were younger.
We were. It was
2 months ago.
It was a long time ago. We were using tin foil and wood for microphones. We still are a little
bit. We still are, but we're in the process. Don't worry about it. Every episode is better, and everybody just needs to calm down.
Yeah. Take it out a notch.
I know that the disaster episode was not good audio. I get it.
And you know what, though? That's part of the learning experience, and it just shows. It shows to the people out there, to the listeners, that we are human. And it's okay.
We are.
We just watched a video of Pink accidentally saying in front of 10 billion people on a stage saying, to school for cool.
Yeah, well, that's the actual lyric. But then she actually forgets the lyric. She's live
in concert.
Oh,
that's what happened. Okay.
She's live in concert and she forgot the actual lyric. And then she just like dropped her knees in laughter and just went with it. And so anyway, things are going better every time, but... the first episode is the one that I am recommending to people because it's a lot of younger people are saying, oh, I would love to hear some recommendations for cool 80s music. And I was episode one, check it out. And, you know, we've changed format a little bit since then. We were a little more regimented. We didn't tell each other things. Now we really spend a lot of time.
It was as if we kept everything a secret from each other. And then we sat down and I was like, shit, what do I say again?
Yeah. And, and then it was like, we could, but now we spend a lot of time together and before these and watch videos and listen to music and do things that pertain to what
this is
a
behind the scenes
about.
Working of our process right here. So
this is where
if anybody out there wants to start a podcast, do it a different way.
Yeah, do not listen to
don't
us.
Don't listen
seriously,
to us
because I still watch videos every night. Like, how can we do this? I like that one a lot. But now I do. It's more fun because we know what we're going to talk about and we've had a little bit of conversation about it.
Yes.
But just to get us excited and ready to sit down and record and, you know, give good information.
For me to say cool things and you to say, yes, Jesus. Yes, that's very cool.
For me to say, oh, God, not again.
Hey, this will be cool. Check this out.
This topic is one that Tom has been saying from the beginning, and I've been, no, I don't know, because it's hard to talk about because you're not seeing things.
Yes.
We can put them up for you, but you can Google, of course. But so it is hard to describe things, but I've been so excited about it once we really started like talking about fashion.
Yes.
In the 80s. And, you know, there's a few very distinct ways of being.
I'm waiting for PG&E to come and light the pilot light on my oven. And so we're actually in my living room right now, the recording studio. And we're waiting for a knock on the door from PG&E sometime between now and 8 o'clock tonight.
And the bedroom door just made a ghostly sound.
It has been.
And we literally looked at each other and then we slowly looked towards the door.
It did it last night. There must be a crack in the window that's blowing it or something. I don't know why it's doing it. I think there's a ghost in here.
There has to be. You live in a very old Victorian home.
Yes. Full of bodies buried in the basement.
Yes.
Going back to 1899. It's amazing.
So, speaking of 1899, the 80s. So, I was saying that there are distinct ways of dressing. You can kind of, and, you know, different people fell into different groups. So, in the early 80s, there was a turn from the 70s and the bell bottoms and the wild shirts and all of those things. And it really went down to kind of like a working class, especially, you know, I'm calling it today the Stranger Things 80s.
I remember a lot of corduroy.
Yeah, a lot of corduroy, the down puffy vests.
Yes.
Which are big now again, but, and, you know, flannels. And it's just a more, the country was going through a transition at that time as well. And so it's a very interesting way to look. And then you get 84, where a big star comes out and changes fashion for young women.
Yes.
And then we have the preppies, and we have the punks, and we have all of these really distinct styles. And, you know, we haven't hit too much on class in the 80s, but this fashion has a lot to do
absolutely
with the class struggle in the 80s, and it was real because of the preppy phenomenon.
Which was a big deal. I mean, I remember I went to Soquel High. There was a lot of kids there that came from a lot of money.
Mm.
There's also a lot of kids that didn't have money, and I, of course, fell into that category. But I remember it. I remember preppy being a thing. The alligator shirts and, you know, the sort of the pastel colors and all that. And
linen suits.
Linen suits.
And just, like, the shiny blonde white people.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
The shiny blonde white people. And, no, do not get me wrong. I wore my share of two polos at a time, so you could put the collar up and it would be one collar on one side and one collar on the other side.
Yeah.
And then the sleeve of the bottom shirt hanging out just a little bit of the other one.
Just for a little texture and contrast.
In the middle of summer, about to die.
Yeah.
But when you commit to a fashion, you commit to a fashion.
And how hot did it get in North Dakota?
In the summer, it gets very, very, very warm. You know, it's often in the 90s and 100s, and then the humidity is extremely high. So you're just kind of, you know, I always say when you step outside, you know, the weather just kind of licks you. It's just...
it's a big wet lick right across your whole
when
body.
I don't go back to North Dakota very much, but when my father died, the day that of his funeral, we buried him, it was like 103.
Oof.
And it was in the middle of the country, so there's not a lot of trees or anything. I mean, it's in the middle of a wheat field is this old, old, old cemetery where my parents have plots.
Wow.
So we were out there, and they had set up a tent for us, you know, and a few other people could be, you know, under that tent.
I see.
But I was just like, oh, my God, like, Dad would be so mad. He hated the heat so much. And it was just so hot. Everyone was just kind of like, oh, it's just wonderful. We loved him so much. Okay, gotta go. Like, it was just so. But
that's how my dad's wedding was last year. It was
like, oh, it was super hot.
Yeah, it was about 350 degrees in Petaluma, California. And everyone was, we all died. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
I tried to do the preppy thing, but we didn't have a lot of money, and it really wasn't my style. I really wanted to be more ducky-ish.
Yeah, right.
From Pretty in Pink, I didn't, but that's what, you know, it was like a status thing to wear the preppy stuff.
Yes.
You know?
Did you have the top cider shoes, the brown leather with the leather laces?
I did in the 90s when I became like a little gay boy here in San Francisco, and then I did, because that was really, you know, I'd wear like a...
Well, I started that style.
You did? You started it? Do you know what style I started?
No.
The checkered Vans.
Oh, yeah.
I got those when I went to the county fair, and I was like, fuck it, look at me. Fucking look at my feet.
Well, I got to say right now, because you just mentioned checkered Vans, I'm very jealous. And here's what happened. When we were kids at that time, so this would have been for me, you know, sixth grade. Yeah, sixth grade. It was. We were still at the elementary school, Vine Hill Elementary, and Vans were the thing. It was, you know, yeah, it would have been 1980 and 81, around there. And we did get some Vans, and it was a big deal because my parents, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents weren't big on brand name things. They didn't like brand name stuff. You know, they didn't like that kind of flaunting it and stuff, but we really wanted Vans, and I got a pair of Vans. And I saw everybody at school had Vans, and they all had checkers on the side. And I looked at those Vans, and I looked at my Vans, and I went, somebody get me a fucking ballpoint. And I got the ballpoint pen out, and I drew checkers on my shoes. And I drew checkers all the way across the white border of the rubber part of the Vans. And in retrospect, I was way cooler than those other people. You know,
I knew people who did that too.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. But it was like a skater kind of thing to do too, and it was kind of cool. And like skateboarding started to really get popular right at that time. And but yeah, so the checkered Vans. My sister just got a pair of checkered Vans, and she is so excited.
I mean, I'd wear them today.
Yeah, she wears them all the time. Vans are my sister's shoe. That's her shoe. Vans,
I
mean, and Uggs.
I dress like
Hi, Sissy.
We love you. I dress like a 26-year-old bike messenger, and I'm 48 years old. And so I would wear Vans today.
Yeah, I need a pair of Vans. I've been looking for a pair. But I'm gonna find them at the thrift shop. I'm going like, you know, they're like really ridiculously expensive now for shoes that are like, that will last me 10 minutes that are made in China, you know?
Yeah. And they're not going to last long. Yeah. But so the 80s were a time of, you know, that preppiness came with it. Like the Esprit company.
Yes.
Esprit was very much for those shiny white people.
Yes.
And for those really just those kind of those preppies, the people who had stuff that you didn't.
It was like a clean look. It was like it was such a clean and kind of a polished sort of look.
It was, and the Esprit was a big casual version of that.
Yeah.
Was it just a women's line, Esprit?
I don't remember.
I think maybe both, but it was very large, oversized sweatshirts where the sleeve started like near the waist, and it really came out.
Dorothy Spornak.
Yeah, like a Dorothy Spornak look. And then I remember coming into the mall, I talked before about the new part of the mall where there was a KB Toys and a Freddy's Fudge Factory. And it also had Benetton.
Oh, yeah.
United Colors of Benetton.
Yeah.
And that was this very, at the time, that was an ad campaign of very multicultural people. And it was the United Colors of Benetton, you know, and they were famous for being all over the world. And it was just this very interesting, very straightforward sweaters.
But very colorful.
Very colorful. And they, very expensive. Mm. It was also a very satisfying. No.
Not satisfying?
Satisfying.
Probably is a real word.
Satisfying. That, you know what?
You know what? It is now.
And it's right.
Yeah.
It was a very satisfying look. And they, in all the fashion magazines, and I was very big about fashion magazines, I would cut out the Benetton ads.
Oh, yeah.
And I would hang them all over my room, along with most of the, because I got Glamour every month.
Oh, oh really? God.
Like,
wow.
How did my parents not be like, like, that really is hitting me right now. Like, they ordered it. I think it was like a Christmas present.
They got it through one of the magazine, you know, ads.
It was like a Ed McMahon sweepstakes thing. And I got Glamour and Rolling Stone.
Oh, wow.
And a particular issue of Rolling Stone, and I don't think I've talked about it yet, but this issue of Rolling Stone talked about Generation X, which we were.
Yes.
And it was showing, like, early, like, 84 club kids in New York. And there was, it was like a double issue, and it was like a 15 to 20 page article on Generation X.
Interesting.
And there were big, you know, pages of just a photo of these kids who were maybe our age up to 3-4 years older, right? And it sits in my mind, and I found it online a few years ago and read all of it again.
Wow.
And it brought me to what I wanted. I wanted to be this weird thing, but I couldn't because I was in this small town.
Yeah, right.
Or I felt I couldn't. And or didn't want to, and it was just these very strange people, and they were wearing blue wigs, and, you know, they had all this stuff, and there was talk of drugs and things that made me really scared because I was a sheltered kid in this tiny little town, and I just wanted to be those people, And that, right away, their fashion came out. It was weird, and it was put together. And as we talked about in Pretty in Pink, where she makes all of her own stuff,
yes.
It was mostly made by these kids.
Yeah, interesting.
And it was just really, really interesting. I'll show you some photos of it. It's really cool. Hopefully I can find someone. I'll put them online, too.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I really love about 80s fashion is the spectrum of it. That seems to be this wide variety of styles starting, you know, in the late 70s. And I'm thinking, you know, like by 1982 and 83, so right before I got into New Wave, right before that, I was into breakdancing, breaking and popping and locking. That was my thing, man. Like, and so, you know, the people that I hung out with, you know, we wore parachute pants, the pants with the zippers that went mm-hmm. all the way down, these that were different color inside.
And they were pretty tight, right?
They were not tight at all. They were the opposite. They were super flowy. I mean, zipped down, they were flowy. Zipped up, they were form-fitting.
Zipped up. Yeah.
So I get you. And that's when I started wearing a fedora, which I to this day have 10 or more fedoras in my closet right now.
Yes, but your fedoras are gorgeous.
Yeah.
1940s.
Yeah.
Beautiful fedoras, unlike some kid with suspenders on and
yes.
a hard on. Well,
I don't know. Maybe that's not true. And so, you know, at that time, the big film, you know, was Breakin', the Electric Boogaloo.
Breakin' 1 and then Breakin' 2.
And then there was the other one that I'm not remembering right now. But there was a breakdancing class that happened, like an after-school class that happened in Santa Cruz. And my parents let us go to it, and we mm-hmm. took it. And one of the guys from school, Tony Tedesco, he latched on to breaking and popping like no one I'd ever seen. And he became a master. And he was so good, and he would come up and challenge you. You know, that was the thing about breakdancing. He'd come up and challenge you. And I'd be standing there with my fedora with, like, a fluorescent headband tied to it and, like, you know, bandanas wrapped around my biceps and around my leg with my parachute pants and my two-tone Converse and my double belt. I remember the double belt was a big part of my ensemble. And I'd always get really scared because I wasn't skilled at breakdancing. And one time we were at a show where my parents sold their photography that they made into magnets. It was sort of this thing. It was like a craft fair thing. And I was there in Concord, California, right over here. And I was like, oh, I look so cool. And I walked down the street and I saw these guys breaking. And I was like, oh, they got the cardboard out and they had linoleum and they were ready to dance. They were dancing. And I walked up and this one guy came up to me and he like did the like, you know, like the thing and the pop lock thing. Yeah. And he like looked at me and challenged me. And I looked at him and I was like, holy shit. And I turned around and I walked away. so scared. I was like, I cannot do that, buddy. I'm sorry. But these are like real, like inner city kids that had been doing it. Like they were born into it, you know. But so that was the very early 80s for me. And it wasn't until, you know, 83, 84 that I discovered Depeche Mode and New Order and new wave music, and everything changed as a result.
I remember the ensemble that I wore. So I had a Ford Galaxy.
Wow.
Was the name. That was my first car.
Wow. What year?
It was like a 73.
Wow.
Ford Galaxy, cool. I believe. And my parents got it for me. I think it was like $100. And it was primer gray.
Awesome. Perfect.
And I was like, fuck yeah. I cannot tell you, though, especially in those old cars, because, you know, we had Walkmans and stuff then, but no, mm-hmm. it's not what I like today. I have my phone, I have my headphones on me all the time. Uh-huh. And then, you know, you didn't as much, right? So when you're in the car and a great song comes on, you sit there when you turn the car
yeah,
off.
Yeah, right.
And you sit there and you listen to the song.
Yes.
Because that's what you did.
Yes.
Because I didn't have that song. It was just on the radio.
Yeah.
And so I can't tell you how many times I would just then like walk in the house and not take the keys out, so it was still, you know, and so I drained the battery so many times. But so I got that car in the summer. I oh my God. Okay, so I got this car in the summer of 85. And then homecoming, I was leaving for homecoming, and my parents were watching a television show that came on that night. It premiered that night in 1985. And it was The Golden Girls.
Oh, boy.
And I watched it because, you know, TV started at 7 there.
Yes.
So I watched it, and then I went to go pick up my date, Melanie, who's a mother and a wonderful woman, and I talk to a lot still. And then we picked up my friend, who sat in the... Oh, no, we sat in the back, and he drove my car to the dance,
oh,
to the
wow.
homecoming dance. It was so horrible and awkward because... Obviously, Melanie and I were not going to, but we had a great time because she's so fun.
Uh-huh.
And now she's like a very close friend, has been for years and years. And so I wore, because I wanted to match my car, I wore gray acid wash denim jeans with a, like a 2-inch runner going down the side of each leg of corduroy.
Wow.
Of gray corduroy.
Fancy. Corduroy and acid wash.
And then like a cool like rayon-y type of parachute panty material shirt with the buttons buttoned all the way
up. All the way to the top.
And a brooch, like my grandma's brooch.
Yes.
And then a red bandana around my thigh. But man, like, I looked magical. Like, and here's the thing. I didn't stick out.
Mm, right.
Even in our small, tiny little town. And maybe I did stick out. I was a huge gay kid. But
you stuck out some.
I stuck out some. But, I mean, it was so cool. And for homecomings and stuff, we didn't have a band. We had a DJ.
Yeah, we had DJs.
And a lot of times it would be the drive time DJs from Fargo,
because
you could hire them and they would come out. And I remember clearly that night it was, and I wanted to be that lady's friend. End of story.
I did the brooch, you know, the brooch thing too. And we'll call that like when that was sort of like the beginning of the new romantic phase for me, where, Depeche Mode, I mean, Depeche Mode was it for me. I mean, the music I loved so much, and the fashion. You know, they were a little bit more leathery.
Yeah, they did. But they were in that master and servant phase.
Yes, but still, the music to me dictated this particular style. And so for me, and we talked just the other day about turtlenecks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I would wear my white turtleneck with my trench coat. And like, you know, a paisley shirt buttoned to the top underneath with the brooch. And so that the top of the turtleneck stuck out, you know, the white turtleneck. Mm-hmm. Then I got into a thing where I stopped doing the turtleneck and I decided, you know what, I'm going to tie it around my waist like a half skirt. And so I started pegging my pants at that point, you know, rolling them really tight at the bottom. And I had these cool black pointy shoes. Boy, I wonder whatever happened to those shoes. Anyhow, and then the trench coat was a big part of it. You know, I remember the first time I got a trench coat, and again, like my hats, I have a closet full of trench coats and overcoats now. And I remember being so excited. I got this black trench coat at the flea market. So this was around the time the Terminator came out. So it was about, I think it was 1984. Yep. So I was a freshman in high school. And I had met my best friend, John Dickerman, the first day of high school, the very first day. We just started talking, and next thing I knew, he was into Depeche Mode. I was into Depeche Mode. He built models and thought World War II was neat, and I did too, and we became best friends. And we're friends to this day. But anyway, I remember wearing my trench coat to school, and no matter what I wore, and I've said this many times before, I got bullied and beat up and picked on aggressively and regularly. And I had my trench coat, and I was so excited, and I was like, look, Mom, I got my trench coat. I'm so excited. I had gotten it at the flea market. And she said, oh, you're just wearing that because you think you can hide in it. And she dissed me, and I was like, gee, like, the guy from the Terminator, Reese, he has the same jacket, and I like the trench coat. And she's like, no, you just think you're going to hide in it, and no one's going to bully you anymore. And I was like, okay, fuck you. I went to school, and I, to this day, wear a trench coat, and I was just wearing one now as we walked up the stairs. But it bothered me so much because she was right. You know, I felt that it protected me somehow. It was like a talisman where I could, it covered my body and it covered me and I felt protected. Well, it didn't actually protect me. It singled me out and created more havoc because there was a pecking order for the people that were into New Wave in our school. Yeah. And there was the kids that were a couple years or a year older than us that had been into it a couple years longer. Mm. And they had all the cool clothes. They had the creepers with the, you know, tiger stripe suede on the top and the leather, the real leather jackets. And they had a lot of money too. And so my friends and I, we were, like I said last time, on the ducky side. We were poor and we came up with our own outfits from what we found at the flea market, you know.
It, you know, and I, sitting here talking, I think I feel really lucky to have had my teen years in the 80s because fashion became really expressive for boys.
Yeah.
And I was hiding, you know, you can't see it when you're in it, yeah. But I was gay and I knew it. I didn't exactly know what it all meant. And I was scared and I was a sissy. Mm. And so I tried really hard not to be a sissy, and I would overcompensate by being the way I still am, which is over the top sometimes and dirty and, you know, all of those, inappropriate and all those things. But I was able to wear, I still have a paisley shirt from the 80s. Uh-huh. And it was green and black paisley, and I had one that was brown with all sorts of really bright colors. And so I had paisley shirts and I had brooches and I had bolo ties that I would wear constantly.
Bolo ties. Yes.
And
I forgot. I love those.
I wore them all the time. And like I said last week, I think, like I wore a bolo tie with a black turtleneck. Cool. But, you know, turtlenecks at that point were those tight kind of rayon-y turtlenecks. And it was important for me, I think. I was able to wear hats and I was able to wear, because everyone else did, even in our small little town, that type of over-the-top neon 80s dressing thing, those fads, everyone was doing it.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of richy kids who came in from other areas and they did do the preppy thing, or they did like the guest jeans, right? Everyone coveted jeans. And there were just a few kids in our little town that had them. And then we'd wear the paisley and we had the big hair.
Yes.
And it was accepted. And so I'm really lucky now that I can sit here and look like I'm really lucky that I was able to do that and express myself in a way and not just be called out for being gay.
Yes.
And I was lucky because I had three older sisters who already went through high school and they knew a lot of people. And therefore there was a lot of people there to protect me. And I'm sure I was talked about a lot and I'm sure words were said about me, but never to me. And I was never picked on. And, you know, I was relatively,
I mean,
you know, fine. I think if there was anything, I probably did it with my own mouth, you know, but gosh, being able to wear those things and feel free in a sense was pretty cool.
And I think part of that is, again, it was the music. And that all the music that people were listening to, you know, David Bowie, Cyndi Lauper, Prince, Madonna, all these people were doing this outrageous stuff, but it was common too at the same time, because the 80s, even if you weren't into that style, you still had the big hair.
Yeah.
You still had the layered pastel, whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, you still had that look. And so I think part of it is that it was accepted because all the musicians and everybody in the movies were looking like that too.
And it was just so over the top. It got to a point where it got to be so over the top. So over the top, in fact, that now when people try and recreate it and do like an 80s type project, they can never get it right.
Yeah.
Because it was so over the top and natural at the time.
There was a great Will and Grace episode I saw.
Yes.
That where they go back to their high school years and they nailed the 80s look. And I was like, wow.
Especially with Grace.
Yeah. She really looked real with her pink hair. And for anybody who doesn't know what acid wash is, and I'm sure you do, but acid wash was denim that had been washed in a particular, they called stone wash was another.
Yeah.
Was another term.
But acid wash was the cool 80s term at that point.
And so it was like bleach patterns going across your jeans, essentially.
And, you know, for the first time in 9 episodes, Tom mentioned a name that has not been talked about.
Somehow.
And it's my biggest passion in the 80s, and it went, and still, Madonna. And Madonna, when, you know, she hit in like 82, but then she really got humongous in the end of, you know, 83, and then into 84. And her influence on fashion and the fashion that she did, which was lacy and like lingerie, she wore lingerie and crinolines as a dress, and the permed crimpy hair that was
the hair bow
that was like dirty, you know, it's always kind of dirty and stuck up, and then a big huge scarf tied in a big huge bow, and the black Wayfarer glasses and the black lace and the rubber jelly bracelets and tons of bracelets, tons and tons and tons all up. And it became a phenomenon all around the country. I was going to write someone today on Facebook and I totally forgot to do it. Her name is Kathy, and now she's a very wonderful, upstanding mother. And she was an upstanding person then too, but she was obsessed with Madonna. And we did a video. Can you imagine how big the camera was? It was a video time capsule.
Oh, wow.
And so one person was doing one thing. One person was talking about the shuttles. And then we just played a Madonna song. And Kathy danced in a black lace thing with the big hair bow and the Wayfarers. And danced for like 2 minutes to a song. And it was just a phenomenon. And then there was... Macy's in New York had a huge event, and it was called Madonna Land, and it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of young women dressed just like her, just like her. And it was exactly because when she was doing that particular fashion, that particular look, she was doing it from thrift stores.
Right.
So it was easily gettable.
It was a borrowed from punk. And new wave, but it wasn't. It was its own thing somehow. She didn't look punk, but she had, there was some element of it. But,
well, she altered New York. Okay. She looked like New York, East Coast New York, and she was tough.
Yeah.
And she didn't take any shit. Yeah. And even when she was a young, new, brand new artist, she just didn't mince words.
Yeah.
And girls and boys loved that.
I was in love with her.
And it was just this huge thing, and we were watching a video of it earlier and saying, like, no way, in no way would an artist today, would thousands and millions, millions of people dress just like you.
Yeah, right.
Because there's nothing original anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's an overstatement. But at the same time, when we watched a little bit of Pink, when we watched a little bit of Beyonce, after we watched Madonna tonight, they can't be doing what they're doing without Madonna.
Yeah, it was as if I noticed that for the first time. I thought, oh, wait a minute.
And she's always been, since that time, she's, you know, she's been the great pretender, right? Mm-hmm. She was famous right away for like, okay, that looks over. Then she had a tiny little pixie cut, white blonde hair. And then right after that, she did this other look. And then she's always been a forebearer of what fashion is about to be.
Absolutely.
And even now, as in her late 50s, she still is that.
Yeah.
And she still tends to choose to dress in a fashion that maybe women of 57 or 58 wouldn't dress as, and a lot of people kind of call that out, but Madonna, and she doesn't and that's what she wants to wear, and she can wear it, and she wants to.
Yeah.
And but she's always been a huge part of fashion right from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge influence that went for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And you know, it's famous for the very first MTV Awards ever. Mm. The first year when she was, you know, the album hadn't even come out yet.
Yeah, that's crazy. Album. I didn't realize that.
And she sings Like a Virgin on top of a huge wedding cake.
Against the wishes of her...
of her management of and her record label.
Yeah.
And she did it, and it was the sound heard around the world. It was the shot heard around the world.
Was.
She writhed on the floor in her white bustier and panties with garters and a little crinoline for the wedding dress and her veil, and she her shoe fell off kind of famously, so she kicked them both off, and she did this career defining performance
and turned a 14-year-old Tom into a puddle.
Yes.
Because I had not seen movement like that before in my life. And I was talking to you earlier about the flea market in Santa Cruz. The Skyview drive-in flea market was a big deal. It still goes on to this day. but that's where I got a lot of my music. That's where I found a lot of records. That's where I found a lot of my clothing that I wore. And there was always booths with counterfeit cassettes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you'd go right for them because they were only a couple bucks, mm-hmm. you know, and you could afford it. We were, like I said, we were poor. I couldn't go to the store and buy a brand new Madonna cassette, but I could buy the counterfeit bootleg of it. And one day we were there and they had, you know, pins, you know, the buttons that you put on your shirt and stuff. And they had everybody, Prince and David Bowie and Susie and Banshees and all these artists. But they also had posters one day. And I looked over and I saw this Madonna poster. And I was like, oh, my God. And she's wearing like this green fluorescent lacy top. Mm-hmm. With her earrings and her little beauty mark on the mm-hmm. above her lip there, and her hair crimped and it was sort of like a shot from above looking down, so you could almost kind of see down the, you know, her scantily clad body. And again, 14-year-old Tom was like, I need the poster, and so I bought the poster, and I remember it cost a few bucks and hung it up next to my bed. And I looked at that poster a lot. And then one day I was like, I had never kissed a girl before. I had never kissed a girl. I was 14 years old. I was about to kiss a girl for the first time, but technically the first woman I ever kissed was Madonna. Because I looked at my poster one night and I was like, what would it be like? I was like, what would that be like? Like, what's it? How do you even kiss a girl? And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to practice on my Madonna poster. And I French kissed my Madonna poster when I was 14, more than once. And so I thank Madonna for my sexual awakening as a young man. And I appreciate her. I appreciate her as an artist and as a performer. And when I got, you know, in the early 90s, when I got into DJing, you know, I played a lot of the remixes of her records. And one of my friends, Casey, was particularly in love with Madonna. And we used to listen to Madonna together with her all the time. And I appreciate her. Yeah. For what she did for people, for what she did for women.
I will want to do a full episode on Madonna.
I think we'll have to at this point.
I think we'll have to, and we just watched a little bit.
I promise not to repeat the poster.
No, I think you should repeat the poster as much as you can. So a few years later, or actually right around that same time, 82, 83, mm-hmm. comes a young artist named Cyndi Lauper.
One of my favorites.
And she took that kind of downtown New York, mm-hmm. where she's from, right? She took that sensibility. So she had, it was very interesting. She had like kind of old world meets bustiers and she was really weird and strange. Uh-huh. And had her red hair, but she would wear like...
She had half of her head shaved.
She had half of her head shaved.
A large piece, which is a total common style for women now.
Yes, but then was unheard of. And she kind of just burst on. She still had the crinolines and she had all those things like Madonna, but it was in a much different, harder, kind of like New York Italian. She took that part of her and had that little more edge to it.
It was also less sexualized.
Yes, very much so.
You know, like it was in the same kind of universe of style, but it was unique in that way because it wasn't, she didn't seem overly sexual like Madonna did, which is not a problem. I'm just, the difference is that.
And it's interesting to look at young pop stars today, which I'm not completely up on, but if you look at some of the young women today who are extremely successful and talented and put on these amazing shows, but it is a leotard.
Right.
It's a very sexy or spangled and has rhinestones. Each of them wear a leotard, which is easy to put on other things under it and over mm-hmm. it and all of those stuff. So, but it's just kind of that uniform of every, so she can move and she can dance and can perform. But you look at the women of the 80s, and, you know, the men of the 80s had their own thing going on with Motley Crue and that kind of glam metal look. But if you look at Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, Joan Jett, and Annie Lennox, and Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah.
Those are five of the top female performers in the 80s. And look at their looks, look at their styles, look at their types of music, and how each of them put their stamp on that type of music.
Absolutely.
Joan Jett.
And that style.
Joan Jett with her straight black leather jeans and her straight biker jacket and her shag hairdo. And she was really hard.
Yes.
Annie Lennox with a tailored suit and a tie and her red buzz cut hair with bright red lipstick. Then Chrissy Hynde with a pair of jeans and a tank top.
And the same dark eyeliner, but the bangs.
Her bangs and a shag. And
the shag hair.
But in a different way. And more, you know, rock and roll, but not like heavy metal rock and roll like Joan Jett.
More like a Rolling Stones kind of or a Bob Dylan kind of.
And she did that thing, and she would wear like a bandana or a scarf around her neck.
Yeah.
And she was just really super cool. And then you had Cyndi Lauper, who was this real kitschy, over-the-top eccentric. And Madonna, who really brought that womanly thing and said to girls, I'm going to conquer the world.
Yeah. And she has.
She has and still does.
And paved the way for, oh my God.
Every single young woman who's performing now can do what she does because of Madonna Louise Ciccone.
Yes.
And I want to do at least 3 hours on just
Madonna. I know.
Because it is so fun to talk about. So I mentioned briefly the kind of glam metal thing, androgyny that happened in the mid up to the late, but really with Poison, Motley Crue.
Yeah.
And just tons. I mean,
well,
makeup, lipstick for days,
what,
gloss.
What we called hair metal.
Hair metal. Yeah, thank you.
And that was it. You know, it was very feminine, but they all had hairy chests and these bulging muscles and
and bulging pants.
Lots of cod pieces.
Yes.
Lots of armored cod pieces and leather cod pieces and armor leather cod pieces.
And it wasn't super my bag.
No, it wasn't my bag.
I really was more into the alternative stuff and pop. Tons and tons and tons of pop. And I loved it. We'll talk about it. Speaking of cod pieces, my mother...
you always say that. She's not listening, is she?
No, she just texted about the Pretty in Pink episode, so she is listening. And so my mother was very much into the aerobics craze.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That I think we should probably flesh out a little bit more, too.
Sure.
But aerobics came into that decade like a freaking hurricane.
Aerobics and jazzercise.
And jazzercise was really her deal.
Okay.
And so they would, you know, the Jane Fonda workout tape, all of that stuff. But jazzercise put out several records of songs. Remember that? And
I don't.
They put out records, so they would play like Elvira from Oak Ridge Boys. And in the middle of it, it would be, come on, ladies, bend down, lunge, one, two. And so there would be an instructor who you couldn't see and couldn't see you. And they just described the actions, exercises you were supposed to do, and then you just did it to the music.
Did your mom wear the outfit with the leg warmers?
Yes.
And the,
So very high cut. I don't know how high cut mother's was, but I remember it was striped. It was like a diagonal stripe leotard with hose, pantyhose.
Yeah, you got to wear.
Because that's what you did.
But they ended at the ankle.
Yes, they ended at the ankle.
They're
making
really tight.
Making you wear leg warmers.
Yes, because it was cold.
And leg warmers, Mom had them. Oh, boy, did I wear them.
Flash dance.
I wore them at home. Oh, my God.
My sister had leg warmers. Yuck.
And, flash dance, come on.
Yeah.
And so it was a trend that went beyond the aerobic studio, leg warmers. Leg warmers were just, you just wore them.
Yeah, I remember girls wearing them, and I remember different colors, and leg warmers, if I remember correctly, tied in with the same time period of the 80s where miniskirts yes. became huge because of Valley Girl.
Because of Valley Girl, and they were like a flared miniskirt.
Yeah.
Unlike the 60s where they're more of a straight
cut. Yes.
This had more of a flare. I remember a girl wore like, you know, the diagonal stripe uh-huh. was a really big deal. And purple and white was a big thing mm-hmm. then too. And then it had little puff shoulders on it. We haven't even spoken of shoulder pads yet.
This, you know what? I'm declaring at 49 minutes in, I am declaring this part one. And we'll okay. have to do a part two because the deeper we get, the more it's and I just love this. I just love talking about this.
And so she and hers was her dress was like a sweatpant material.
Yes.
And, you know?
Yeah.
So that was a big thing. I mean, I remember wearing a sweat outfit.
A sweat fit.
Like a matching sweat fit. Like after Christmas, especially, because you get a real nice sweat fit. And you're like, ooh, I'm going to wear this to school. And no one's going to think it's brand new because I'm going to wear it with so much confidence.
Yes.
And then everyone's like, oh, look what you got for Christmas.
And
I'm like, so? What about it?
You're jealous.
You're just jealous. All your ass faces.
We've talked a lot about the women, but one of the influences in my breakdancing, my early and to mid to just post breakdancing phase was Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there being, you know, counterfeit Michael Jackson jackets at the flea market in black yeah. with the zippers, the red ones, you know, with the zippers that he wore in the Thriller video
yeah.
and, or in, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really into wearing the one glove. And
me
that was part
too.
Of my thing with the breakdance. Yeah. And my dad was a photographer, and he had these white gloves that he would use to handle his models. They were there for photography, but he used them to handle the models after he painted them, mm-hmm. not to get fingerprints on them. And I stole one time. I stole one because it was actually white with... with silver sparkles in it. And it looked like a Michael Jackson glove to me. And I remember walking down Scotts Valley Drive with my bandanas and my fedora and my one glove and showing up to school and everybody going, why are you wearing one glove? Where's your other glove? What are you wearing? Blah, 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 blah. And that was kind of the beginning for me because I was like, the more crazy I got with my style, my fashion, the more shit I caught.
Yeah.
But there was no stopping me because here I am now.
And exactly.
You know what I mean?
And I, there's going to be a little noise because I'm moving a chair. I did that too. The one glove was such an important part. Like, I would wear it constantly
yeah.
and just be aware of it because
yeah.
it was so cool.
Yes, it was so cool.
I couldn't believe how cool it was. And I was just so aware of it all the time. And I just wanted, like, why can't when we play, you know, when we play during the basketball game, the band, why can't we all just wear one glove? Like, like, wouldn't that be so cool?
Baseball players do it.
But, yeah, he was definitely
a
fashion icon of that time, along with our very dear friend, Prince.
Prince, who, he was his own Madonna. He was a Madonna of sorts with his totally unique fashion, feminine, not necessarily androgynous, looked very feminine to me.
It was more feminine than androgynous.
It was.
And that was his way of crossing that line.
Yes.
But it was so cool. Now, it wasn't really something that I saw in North Dakota a lot.
No.
We would, you know, we would get to Minneapolis and go see, you know, people there.
Yeah,
and it was
right.
very such a big, that was such a big town, and it was the home of all that. So people
yeah.
were dressing like that there at night.
I mean, I guess it wasn't that big at my school either, but we had preppies and normal people and then us, like our guys. And, you know, talking about the music and the influence of the music on fashion, Flock of Seagulls were one of the big ones for me. You know, more than Depeche Mode, I dressed more like Flock of Seagulls because I didn't have the leather jacket and the leather pants and the
yeah.
tank top. I wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
I wasn't there yet. And from the Flock of Seagulls, that was about the time. So this would have been about, so my freshman and sophomore year in high school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 84, 85, again, is when I started getting into skateboarding. And skateboarding for me was the style of skateboarding for me was a combination of punk and new wave and what would soon lead to my mod years. Mm. And so the skateboarding style I loved, it was really cool. It was like, you know, Vietnam era, you know, army pants that were all safety pinned up the front. It was that, you know, brought the kind of the punk and Vans. The Vans were yeah. a big part of it at that time. And I drew graffiti and skulls all over my Vans. And it was like skate and destroy, you know, and like rat, but Bones Brigade. And like, that was the thing. We were super into skating, but we were unique with all the skaters that we hung out with because me and my pals listened to new wave music mm-hmm. and they listened to, I don't know what they listened to, but they didn't listen to music we listened to. And that's when I got into actual punk rock, you know, like really dove into punk rock. And I started buying NME, New Music Express, mm-hmm. and started buying punk rock zines to learn about the music. And I started going to the record store all the time to seek out punk music. And from that style, that led into, and it was still new wave all the way up until about 1986, 87. In the summer of 1986, my friend John Dickerman, I talked about him earlier, he bought a Vespa. He bought a 90cc 1970 Vespa and didn't tell us. And we were hanging out skateboarding one day, and I have a photograph. I have a photograph series of this. I used to carry a camera around everywhere with me. And my friend Robbie and I, we were skateboarding in the parking lot of Wells Fargo Bank in Scotts Valley, which was the spot to hang out for us to skate. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, here comes this dude, and we're looking and going, oh my God, it's John. He's on a Vespa. And I was like, Vespa? And I was like, wow, that's cool. And he took us around and gave us little rides on it, and he was wearing a parka. Wearing the you know, army parka with the fur hood.
And the orange lining.
And the orange line, yeah. And that's when everything began to shift for me, and I would slowly ease into the mod scene. And when I was a mod, it was all about fashion. You know, if you don't know what the mods were working class kids in England who listened to, this is back in the 60s, they listened to American R&B, blues, soul music. They were into black music. They listened to Jamaican ska. And they wore suits with skinny ties and pork pie hats. And they were very clean cut looking. And they wore things like Fred Perry shirts. Fred Perry was a famous tennis player. And the mods were related to the skinheads, which were related to the punk scene. Yeah. And so it was just this mishmash of styles that I loved, every single one. And so for like 1987 into 1988, that's what I was doing. But as soon as I was out of high school, 1988 is when I dove full mod. And that is all I did. I wore suits every day. I pegged my pants. I wore skinny tie. Pretty much how I dress now.
Now you dress now, but you know you're in more retro way of 40s.
I'm a little bit further back, but I do have my 60s suits that I love so much. And my if anyone's listening, I have approximately 300 vintage ties of various eras, going from the 20s all the way up into the 20s to the 60s. I don't have anything new. But, you know, along with that style came Doc Marten boots. Mm-hmm. Which we coveted highly. We all wanted Doc Marten boots and could not afford them. There was no way in hell that we could afford Doc Marten boots. And we knew that if you got fake Docs, that everybody would know.
Yeah, right away.
And so I stayed away from the fake Docs and I wore vintage shoes instead. I wore black shoes, exact shoes I'm wearing right this very second, in fact, the same style. It was a great time for style and fashion for me and my friends because it was so clean and respectable looking. However, we were not clean and respectable young men.
But I have a great photo that I will post of you. I have a great mod photo of you. That was something that wasn't around. There was no, maybe there was in Fargo, but there was nothing in the Midwest like that that I can think about it. I saw them. I saw them in Rolling Stone, the Mods, and stuff like that. But and even in Glamour. But I didn't. Nothing around me. I was able to do that type of thing, and I was attracted to it. But you know, it just wasn't around.
Yeah.
So I took to wearing a lot of polo shirts, but in a different. I would wear them buttoned all the way up, kind of like the skinhead.
You gotta wear. You gotta have it buttoned up.
I think so. And I remember going to a speech contest, like state speech, like the big. You know, the big show. And I went, and for that day, I wore khakis. I'm sure some sort of a KED slip-on type shoe. I've always been a slip-on. I love my slip-ons.
You're wearing slip-ons right now.
I'm wearing slip-ons right now. Brand new pair I bought yesterday. And I...
Because you don't know how to tie your shoes.
Yeah, and I just don't want to. It just takes so long. That's why I don't eat bread with dinner, because it takes too long to butter it. And that's why I don't usually use salt and pepper at the table, because it takes too long to use. And I won't eat ribs, because it's too much work.
You got to clean your hands afterwards.
No, and like you just got to work. You have to be so active doing it, and I don't want to do that.
A lot of chewing.
So I wore khakis, a slip-on shoe, black. Socks, I'm sure that matched the khakis.
Probably.
And then a black polo shirt, one of those woven ones, you know, so they were a little heavier. And then buttoned all the way up. And then I wore one of those knit ties. Do you remember the knit ties?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to post one. Okay. So they're like heavy. They're like a double knitted, super chunky knit
like
tie.
Some grandma crocheted.
Yeah. And they were very, very popular. And I wore that for the big speech contest.
Oh, wow.
And I thought I was something and a half.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
I was like, check me out.
I remember in my, so my sophomore year in high school, I wanted to continue with the fedora thing, and I got really into it, and I got into ties. Like I said, this is right before the mod era for me. And I asked my parents, they were going to take us shopping for clothes. And I asked my, God, you know what I really want? Mom, Dad, you know what I really want? I want a pair of baggy gray slacks. I want a cool pair of like that you see in the old movies, the kind of pants I wear right now. And so they did. They took me and I found a cool pair of these, you know, sort of dark gray, baggy, pleated slacks. And I got a matching vest, like an actual suit vest and a tie. And I wore my fedora, and that was sort of the beginning of my style that I wear every day now. But the thing about these pants that I'll never forget is that when you sat down, they bunched up in the front. And it looked, from where I was sitting, it looked like maybe everyone in class thought I had an erection.
Yeah.
And I was terribly embarrassed by these pants. And once I sat down, once I was standing up, everything was fine. But as soon as I sat down, I always crossed my hands over my elbows over my, or sat really close to the desk so that no one could see, because I thought, God, everybody in class is looking over going, oh my God, Tom has a hard on in class. Oh my God. They never thought that.
But everyone thought that, because it happened all the freaking time.
Because they were so baggy.
Every like 10 minutes. Oh my God. Let's just do an hour on the mortification of being called up to the front of the classroom when you have a boner.
One of the things that we did, Ben Davis was another kind of a working class style that we adopted, that went from skateboarding into our mod scene. And you know, I had, like I said, I was one of the first boys to have an earring in my school, and I took a lot of shit for it. But there's a great photograph in my my sophomore yearbook, where I have my head shaved on one side and this sort of this wave thing going on.
Oh, yeah.
On the left, on the right hand side, and my turtleneck, my white turtleneck, and my gray baggy pants. But I'm wearing an earring in the picture, and what I thought would be cool is it was a hoop earring, and I took it and I put a little 1-inch French Foreign Legion soldier, little action figure, through the loop. And so I wore that and it dangled, and I thought it was so cool. I'm like, I wonder whatever happened to that little figure. He was cool. I painted him and everything. It was neat.
That as you're talking, just so many memories flood in. So you're exactly right that we need a part two. But let's, I think we should end this with what really the decade is kind of defined by a lot of people, which is the shoulder pad.
The shoulder pad.
And the shoulder pad for every person, but especially women.
Yes.
You can see shoulder pads on a great display if you watch the following programs. Designing Women.
Golden Girls.
Golden Girls. L.A. Law. If you think you've seen a shoulder pad, you haven't seen a shoulder pad until you've seen a lawyer pad, where high-powered attorneys in Los Angeles have, like, basically, like, X-Wing fighters on their shoulders because they're so big. So we're going to post a lot of pictures. We're going to post some pictures of Tom. I am thinking of where the box is in my garage where my yearbook is so I can My sister Lynn was and is a hairdresser, and she was relatively new at it in the 86, 87. And not until I looked a few years ago at my yearbook did I realize at one point, and specifically near the Christmas concert, the annual Christmas concert at school, I was completely like white-haired blonde.
Oh, wow.
And I thought it was kind of highlighted until I looked. I was like, oh, geez. Like and I looked just like Flock of Seagulls. It's just like huge, and it's down, and it's down by one eye, and it's pretty fantastic. Yeah. But so I will try and find some photos.
Sorry, really quick, in regards to the shoulder pads specifically, and I've been thinking about this a lot because it came up when we were talking about Iona in Pretty in Pink.
Yes.
With her shoulder pads and that sort. The 80s was one of the eras that took influence from decades before. And the 80s took a lot of style ideas and cuts and shoulder pads from the 1940s. Mm-hmm. So the late 1940s up into the early 50s is when shoulder pads were really big, especially for men's clothes. Men's and women's clothes, but suits is what I meant to say. And so that was one of the appeals to me with 80s fashion was the throwback to the 40s, which was a something that I was just beginning to really become fascinated by.
Yeah.
And so I just want to comment on that because...
Well, and it's interesting to see that, yes, in suits for men and for women and men, the shoulder pads get bigger and bigger and bigger, but it's even, it's to every sweater that Joanna ever wore on Newhart, her shoulder pads in those fluffy Angora sweaters were so huge.
They were massive.
And B. Arthur is already a very tall, statuesque woman.
6'2".
6'2", but she looks like a linebacker with these humongous shoulder pads, but that was like her calling card. We're going to do Golden Girls in a few weeks. We'll do a Golden Girls show, and we'll talk a lot more about the shoulder pad. But we will wrap it up. I don't have much to plug or say. You?
You should all follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
And follow us on Facebook. We post lots of links to some of the music and some of the photographs of the era and of the episodes we've been talking about.
Yep.
Also, please, if you have a moment, rate us on iTunes.
Yep, rate and review.
Because that helps us get our annoying voices out there.
It does. And it really does help. And I can't tell you how, but it does.
It's magic. It's computer magic.
I've read a lot about it.
Yeah.
And so it really does help. I know that we've had a lot of people do it, and I thank you so much. And I hope everyone has a cool week.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
All right. Stay awesome.
Stay rad.
Bye.
Bye.